face of my enemy. I see my brother. I see my brother. When I look into the face of my enemy, I see my brother. I see my brother.
Vision of brotherhood is happening here at Crossroads. One of the amazing things God's done around here is he's bringing people together across socioeconomic lines, across racial lines, to be a unified community together. It's a beautiful thing that's happening, and today we're going to talk about that. So I'm excited that you're here. I'm Chuck Mingo, campus pastor here if you're here for the first time. And one of the things that we do when we come together is we use music to really orient our hearts to God. Wherever we've come from in the morning, as we're kicking off this day, wherever we're watching from, it's an opportunity for us to come together and say, God, I'm here for this 65 minutes to experience you, to move further toward you. And some of us, that's exactly how we feel. For others of us, we're at least open to the idea that there's a God who wants to connect with us. So I'm going to invite everybody to stand and let's use these words and the songs to help us connect our hearts to God and to each other.
Sing, seek the Lord. Mercy and passion, oh, yeah. so good, and I thank you that you have reconciled us to you through your Son, and I thank you that your heart is for us to be reconciled with one another. And I'd pray that you be in this room in the conversation today, and you just fill this room with your grace and your love. Thanks, God. Amen. All right, everybody, good singing. Why don't you give somebody around you a handshake? Ask them how they're doing, and you can have a seat.
That song we just sung, I think Crossroads is at its best, the church is at its best, when what we're doing is removing obstacles that enable all of us to pursue God more, because he's beautiful, he's worth it. And so I just want to tell you about a couple ways, things that are happening that can further your pursuit of God around Crossroads. One is happening this Wednesday. It's Next Level. At the last Wednesday of every month, those of us who have said yes to Jesus get together for a time of extended singing together like we just did here, but we also get together for some teaching that's connected to what we've been journeying on in the weekend, go a little bit to a next level with that. We'll be doing that. And then we also have communion there. It's this Wednesday at 7 p.m., and we'd love for you to come and be a part of Next Level. The second thing is we've just seen over and over around here that there is power connected to prayer. Prayer works. We've seen it work. We've seen miracles happen. That's why after every service, including this one, you can stay in your seat and someone will come to your seat and pray with you. It's also why we're doing these regular nights of healing prayer, nights of prayer. So there's another one coming up, and we'd love for you to be a part of it. Maybe you want prayer for something that you're going through personally. Maybe you know someone and you want to bring them to a place where they can pray and be prayed for. You don't have to be an expert on prayer to be a part of this, but it is a place to connect with other people who are experiencing the power of God through prayer. So we'd love for you to come and be a part of that as well. You know, we know that a lot of folks around here are new, that you may have come post our Wait at Christmas show, or maybe you came for this crazy thing we did a couple weekends ago called Super Bowl, and you said, I'll try this place, I'll come back. And you might be at the place now where you're wondering, tell me a little bit more about Crossroads. We have a great event for you. It's happening right after the service. It's our Connect event. It's an opportunity for you to meet the team here at Oakley, and for us to get to meet you and begin to make this big place small. You can just go right afterwards to Meeting Room C. We also know we got folks watching us from anywhere. And if you have a question you'd like to connect, there's a number that'll show up at the bottom of your screen, and you can connect with us that way. Wherever you are, we want you to have that as a way to take a next step. One of the things that this team does together is pool our resources to be a blessing in our city and around the world, to see the kind of life change that happens when people pursue the God who's beautiful. So we're going to have a chance to do that right now as we take up an offering. So a couple ways you can engage on this. There's going to be volunteers coming down with bags, and you can give cash or check that way. More and more of us are giving online at crossroads.net/give. You can give that way as well. And again, if you're brand new, we totally understand. You may not trust us with your money yet. We're just excited that you're here. But for those of you who've been checking the place out, or those of you who call this place home, great time to jump in and be a blessing for the things God's calling us to. Well, as we said, we're in this series, Death to Religion. And today, we're looking at death to separation, long live unity, by having a conversation that's often challenging to have in mixed company. We're going to talk about race today. But the truth is, it's a conversation that I think we can uniquely have in the church. And even if it's uncomfortable to talk about, thankfully, we've got Key and Peele to help us laugh about it first. We're glad you're here.
All right, listen up. Sheriff's department's close by. We'll be safe there.
Okay.
Stay close. I'll get you out of here.
They got bread!
They didn't get us! Okay? We're still alive.
Okay.
All right, keep it together.
Yeah, okay.
We gotta make it to that sheriff's station.
We gotta get through them. Just stay together, keep moving, and don't get bit. Go!
Are you getting this?
Yeah, what is up?
All right, let's go.
crazy.
What? Ain't that some? These are some racist zombies. Why would you even lock the door? I mean, the window's broken and. No. Oh, come on. What is that?
They seriously wouldn't let her eat us.
Hey, guys. Isn't this great? These racist zombies are leaving us alone. Come on, we're having a party.
The beer is here.
As some truth is there, and we're going to be looking at this strange concoction of religion and race today, and have a conversation about this, and I look forward to it. I hope you will as well. Let's pray before I go any further. God, we're asking that you'd enlighten all of us today, no matter what our skin color is, no matter what our cultural background is. We want to understand each other better, and that comes out of understanding you better. So help me to be clear today, and God, I thank you for the honor and privilege of doing my best to represent your truth today. And I pray these things according to the character and identity of Jesus. Amen. So we're looking at this series, Death to Religion, how religion is a system that says, if you work this system, then you get to God. If you work this system, then you're better than somebody else. And this system, these set of rules, whatever religion it happens to be, the American religious system, the Christian tradition religion system, the atheistic religion system, everyone has a system they're trying to work to make themselves feel good about themselves and appease their higher power and get to where they think they need to go. And this needs to die. It is dying, and it's killing us, because what we need is a relationship with the real and living God. And when you look at the history of religion, religion and race have a sordid relationship with one another. If you think that Christians are always fighting with Muslims, or Mormons are always fighting with somebody else, or this is already happening here, or if you just take a look at the history of religion, from all that we know, what you really boil down to is not so much, I don't think, people fighting over beliefs. It's their ethnicity that's represented inside of their religion. All the major religions have had a dominant race or a dominant culture that's been in there. And I don't think that so much it's the value ideas that's going against one another. I think it's the being threatened and looking down on somebody who isn't like us, someone who we don't understand. And we need to understand that the Bible has been used, absolutely used, to fuel racism. The Bible has absolutely been used to put others down or keep others in their place, but the Bible absolutely does not endorse any form of racism. This is one of the elements of again, people who have been aligned with Jesus have misused or misunderstood certain scriptural passages. But if you take a look at the Bible from beginning to end, it's all about relationship. Relationship with God that then trickles to all of our relationships with one another. In the book of Amos, chapter 9, verse 7, it says this, "Are you not like the Cushites to me, O people of Israel, declares the Lord? Did I not bring up Israel from the land of Egypt and the Philistines from Kaphtor and the Syrians from Kir?" God here mentions a bunch of different nations, and he mentions them in the context of, am I not doing something in them? And you might say, okay, Brian, what about, there's stuff in the Old Testament where God is really, really down on foreign nations, and the nation of Israel is never supposed to intermingle with foreign nations. I mean, what about that? Well, yeah, let's understand that the relationship they had with God, a pure God, the one true God, was entirely different than a God of Baal, or a God who was sacrificing and calling for the sacrificing of babies. And so God said, you're not to hang out with those folks. You're not to intermarry with those people. Not because of their skin color or because of their culture, but because of the God and the practices that they have, that you can't have anything to do with that. But then we do see people coming into the nation of Israel from all other kinds of nationalities and ethnicities, coming in and being grafted in from time to time. I think we just have to recognize up front, this is a very difficult topic to talk about because very rarely do we ever talk about it in mixed company. And I am white. I don't know if you realize it or not. I'm white. Have you noticed that? I am white. And what I'm going to say today, I'm not trying to represent all white people. And Chuck is going to be with me in a little bit. And Chuck's not going to be representing all black people, but or all non-white people. But we're going to be able to have a dialogue just to look at some things that are simply true about who we are and the state of relationships. And if you're white, like me, you're in a unique position because the racial discussion is, for the most part, about somebody else. Because you, if you're white, you don't really feel discriminated against because of your color. Most of us don't feel like there's a lot of opportunities that are shut down because we're white. But nonetheless, if you're white, you have to at least wrestle with reality. And I think one of the more poignant prophets of our time, who actually, I hope you can enjoy his words here, is Louis C.K.
I guess I'm a bummer. I don't know. I shouldn't be. I'm a very, lucky guy. I got a lot going for me. I'm healthy. I'm relatively young. I'm white, which thank God for that shit, boy. That is a huge leg up. Are you kidding me? Oh, God, I love being white. I really do. Seriously, if you're not white, you're missing out because this is thoroughly good. But let me be clear, by the way. I'm not saying that white people are better. I'm saying that being white is clearly better. Who could even argue? If it was an option, I would re-up every year. Oh, yeah, I'll take white again. Absolutely. I've been enjoying that. I'm going to stick with white. Thank you. Here's how great it is to be white. I could get in a time machine and go to any time, and it would be awesome when I get there. That is exclusively a white privilege. Black people can't f*** with time machines. A black guy in a time machine is like, hey, anything before 1980? No, thank you. I don't want to go. But I can go to any time. The year 2? I don't even know what's happening then. But I know when I get there, welcome. We have a table right here for you, sir. Oh, thank you. Now, if you're white and you don't admit that it's great, you're an... It is great. And I'm a man. How many advantages could one person have? I'm a white man. You can't even hurt my feelings. What can you really call a white man that really digs deep? Hey, cracker.
Ugh, ruined my day. Boy, shouldn't have called me a cracker. Bringing me back to owning land and people. What a drag.
Yeah, that's good stuff right there. That's good stuff. If that bothers you, the next half hour is going to be utter hell for you. It really is. I'm telling you right now. It's going to be great. We just have to be honest with where we are and what's going on inside of us. I will speak for a lot of white folks. I say this. If you put a camera on us and you watched us throughout the day, you wouldn't find any racist behavior. And so when the race conversation comes up, we're often like, what are you talking? You can't look at my eye. At the same time, if we're honest with ourselves, there's a conversation internally that happens regularly, at least for me. I'll speak for myself. Where I go work out, it is an incredibly multicultural place where I work out. And I come back, I'm sweating, and I am, I take off my clothes, grab my towel and go in and take a shower. So I take off my clothes, I grab my towel, and I got all my stuff in my locker, right? I got my iPhone in there, I got my wallet in there. And if I look around and I see like all white guys around, I'm likely to not lock my locker, to immediately go in and shower and say, I'll be fine for 3 minutes, come back, and all's good. If I look around and there's some black guys around, I'll think, should I actually lock this or not? Now, not that I always do lock or unlock with white or black. I'm just saying I think about it And it's a process. I don't think about a process if it's a 6'1 guy and a 5'5 guy. And so all of us have our perspectives. All of us have our stuff. It's part of the fallen, sinful condition, whether you're white or non-white, that you have. And the Bible comes against this over and over and over and over again. There's amazing clues of multiracial, crazy reconciliations happening all in the Bible. I'll just read you some. Mark chapter 15, verse 21. We have Jesus here who's being beaten and flogged. He's now dragging his cross to Golgotha. He's too weak to keep going, and here's what it says. And they compelled a passerby, Simon of Cyrene, who was coming in from the country. Why do they say this? Why do they call out the Cyrene? This was from North Africa. We have a Jew being helped by a pure black guy who's being helped. I think it's fascinating. They actually tease this out. It's like we see different races coming together for something of power here. In the book of Ephesians, chapter 2, and many New Testament books, the central theme is the racism that exists between Jews and Gentiles. A massive, massive difficulty between the Jews and anybody else who isn't a Jew, because God's relationship starts with the Jews, and then they just think they're the best ones, they're the only ones. And so God has to really, really come against them and the people who are leaders in the early church who also have this cultural bias, racial bias towards people like them. So in the book of Ephesians chapter 2, it says this, "For he himself, Jesus, is our peace, who has made us both into one and has broken down in his flesh the dividing wall of hostility." Boy, does that sound like today? Do we not need broken down the dividing wall of hostility, that he might create in himself one new man in place of the two, so making peace and might reconcile us both to God in one body through the cross, thereby killing the hostility? Right now we're thinking, gosh, why is this, some of us might be thinking, why is this a big deal? Why are we taking a whole time to talk about this? Oh, lest we forget. We always have these nice little lulls where the walls of hostility have just been sort of silent, and then something happens in our city, in nationwide, there's a flash, and you realize, oh my gosh, it's always right beneath the surface. So while things are somewhat calm, this is the time to talk about walls of hostility and bringing them down. In the book of Acts chapter 10, we see Peter, who seems to have a lot of issues with bringing people into the church who are of a different ethnicity and have different culture while allowing them to retain their same culture. He seems to have a problem with this over and over and over again, and so God has to visit him with a supernatural vision. And here's what happened. So Peter opened his mouth and said, "Truly I understand that God shows no partiality, but in every nation, anyone who fears him and does what is right is acceptable to him." This is a very clear and consistent, passionate idea from God to get us as people being one in relationship with him and being one in relationship with others, no matter what your skin is, no matter what your culture, no matter what many of your preferences, to be one. And the walls of hostility religion sometimes fosters, because religion picks out ideas or misinterprets things to justify our supremacy, but that is not who God is. Now, to take us the rest of the way, we want to actually have a real conversation. Chuck Mingo, our campus pastor at Oakley, is going to be talking with me. We're going to put a number up on the screen or on your screen as you look from Crossroads Anywhere that you can text messages in, text questions in, and we're going to try to dialogue about these questions. And while we get ready for that, and while Chuck comes up, let's take a look at one more fodder for discussion.
Hola, papi.
I love that video. I really do. A, because it's funny. But B, I think it really does point to what you were saying about we all have these unconscious biases that we don't necessarily see, and sometimes they bubble to the surface. I want to thank you, too, just for your vulnerability in the gym story. I mean, I think that's the kind of vulnerability that we've had in our relationship that's helped me go to a new place. So I'm excited to have this conversation.
Good. So we're going to be pitching questions. You're going to find perhaps some of our differences in perspectives, but you're going to see at least what it looks like for people of different cultures to actually appreciate each other, have a relationship, and talk about stuff. We need to start talking about this.
Yeah. So you want to dive in? Well, the other thing, just applause. So there might be things might be things you agree with. There's certainly going to be things you disagree with. And what we don't want this to look like is the State of the Union in the United States, where people just clap at the thing that they like and are quiet at the thing they don't like. So for all of us, let's just engage intellectually, but we'll keep the applause out of this conversation.
Right, because that's part of what we'll do. Oh, you're clapping for that. So you're one of those people.
Right.
And
right.
Wherever you are, we want to push you today without being able to draw lines. So let's go. What do we got?
All right, first question. Can you speak to seemingly harmless and well-intentioned comments that all of us make, but don't understand are terribly offensive to other races? I don't see color. Some of my best friends are XYZ. Or what do you people think about those kinds of comments? So, Brian, what do you people think about comments like this?
Well, I'm from a position of power, so I'm never offended by anything anybody says racially. I'm just not. You're the answer. Honestly, that's one of the. I think part of us is whiteies. What we have a hard time with is even understanding that, because I'm never bothered by any racial comment. I just can't comprehend that. I'm it's just totally outside of my radar. I don't understand what that's like. That's like, as a man, there's certain things I'll never experience because I'm not a woman. Thankfully, I'll never experience menstruation, so I'll never be able to understand that. And as a white guy in America, I just can't understand at all being racially offended. So that's why you're the best person to answer it.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy to. I think, you know, harmless is here's what I would say. I think it really matters the level of relationship you have with the person. So here's my default. My default when I go into a conversation about race is to assume that if you're asking me that question, your heart is to learn, that your heart is to engage me in an answer. And if that's my heart, I'm going to be less concerned about how you word things than I am about the question that you're really asking. I think that's part of, you know, what it means to give grace in this conversation. So for me, I don't get as worked up about the you people comments or the some of my best friends are. I do get worked up about the I don't see color.
Which, come on, some of my best friends are. That is absolutely not true.
That's true. Whenever you say that, it's usually
not
true.
Some of my best friends. You must have very shallow friendships. If they're only...
Yeah, no. But I do take issue with the I don't see color. And it's really because, I mean, we talked about this. There's a video that's out. It's really popular. And, you know, it's this, you know, highbrow creative. And it starts out with this poet saying, I am not black and you are not white. And it kind of goes on this thing. I get the idea behind it. But for me, I don't think the problem or the goal is to be colorblind. I think it's how we respond to those differences that are our issue. In the Bible, I see great imagery around beauty and diversity. And so I don't want to be colorblind as much as I want to be willing to engage.
Right, that is so maddening to me. I am not black. I am not white. Yes, you are.
Yeah.
Or brown or whatever you are. Or yellow, whatever. Yes, you are. Absolutely
right.
You are.
That's right.
Boy, it's probably offended somebody right there. Yes, absolutely you are. Yes. Or like, I am not a man. I am not a woman. That's in that one video you're talking about. Yes, you. Actually, in your case, you're probably not a man. But yes, absolutely. this idea that we can't see distinctions is ridiculous. And this is part of the problem in the New Testament. Yeah. Part of the problem in the New Testament was they wanted Gentiles to run away from their cultural preferences and become Jewish. Mm-hmm. Eat Jewish, circumcised Jewish, this and that and the other. And God said, no, you can identify as Gentile, as Egyptian, as Greek, and stay in that culture and have a relationship with me.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and just to be clear, that was the big deal in the early church.
The
and
defining
so
thing.
It was the defining thing. So another question. Comment on the term white privilege. I'd love for you to take this one. This would be good.
Like I said, I don't speak to all white people for all white people. So it's interesting. Whenever I talk about race, I always find it's the white people who are most upset with what I say than the black people. Not sure why that is. I don't understand what's intended by white privilege. I would just look at it this way. There is a stream in our culture that makes it easier to succeed if you're white. Yes, everyone has the same opportunities, but not everyone has the same foundation that they're standing on. Slavery was 140 years ago. That's two old women. That's two old women ago. That's not that long ago. All of us know in our family of origin that there's dysfunctions in our families where we've been around forever and we keep wrestling with it, whether it's alcoholism, judgmentalism, whatever it is. Well, we took African families, kidnapped African families over here, and we obliterated the family structure, utterly obliterated it. I mean, the number of fatherless homes in black home, black kids will have less fathers by far, and no question, statistics will show very, very clearly one of the leading indicators whether or not you will succeed is if you have a dad in the house.
Yeah.
One of the leading indicators is whether or not you will have both parents in the house. That's just statistical fact, okay? And when we created something way long ago, the black community has still not recovered. Yes, they have some responsibility in the choices they're making right now. Yes. Okay, just understand, there's things that I take for granted that I just have, that foundations that I'm standing on, that African Americans just don't have. You mentioned another one I didn't even think about, white privilege, even governmental decisions as recently as World War II in the 70s.
We were talking about this. So, you know, one of the things that often gets mixed up, it might be a question we get today, is isn't the issue and the divide in our country really more of a poverty issue, the haves and the have-nots, and there's a racial issue? And in my mind, you can't separate the reality of our country when you ask that question. So we were talking about in World War II, when GIs were coming back from the war, there was the initiation of something called the GI Bill, which we probably all heard of. The GI Bill did two main things. It created opportunities for people to finance education, and it made it easier for people to finance homes. So you used to have to put 50% down on a home. The GI Bill came, and you know that went way down percentage-wise, and there was like $150 billion poured into a program, a governmental program, to make that happen. Well, the way that program was administrated, you had something called redlining. And that was absolutely done along racial lines geographically. So it was harder or almost impossible for people who weren't white to access those funds. If you think about the average American family, their wealth is in their home. If you're four generations of homeowners, the likelihood is you're going to have more wealth than a generation who didn't have that opportunity. And that was a systemic program that limited that opportunity. So when you look today at haves and have-nots, when you look today at the level of home ownership in certain Cincinnati neighborhoods, you can't divorce it from the reality that there was a program that racially discriminated. So we were talking about that.
Yeah, I think you and I might differ a little on this. For me, I'm more concerned about the poverty issue than the race issue. I see the injustices, but I'm more concerned about the end result of poverty. And I have an equal amount of heartbreak for rural Kentuckians who are living in torn, bad trailer homes I ride by on my bike, as I do people in inner city projects who are just about all black, right?
Yeah.
So. Race and poverty, they unfortunately intersect.
Yeah, completely agree. Let me say one other thing on white privilege that I would say. I think you explained it super well. I would just encourage you, if you're white and that term bothers you, don't get stuck there. I think a lot of times my experience has been in conversations, whites can get stuck there. And it's I got to explain away white privilege. I didn't choose this. And it's like, okay, that's not the point. The point isn't to get stuck there. The point is to say, if that's reality, then how do you respond beyond that?
And not only that, let's just get a little sparks going here a little bit. Not only that, there's a lot of 20-somethings who would say, white privilege, my rear. I come out of college with the same degree as somebody else, and I'm even better than them, and I see them, they're black, and they're getting all kind of job offers because companies want to hire black people. It's hard for me as a white person to get a job.
You think that's
a problem or not?
It's definitely a change in our culture for sure. I mean, I think, you know, there's for sure people who feel that way. We talked about this before. I'd love to know the statistics on that. You know, for the five stories of people who say, "Man, I got edged out of a job for a black person." There's a whole lot of other stories on
the other side.
Well,
isn't that part of the lot? But isn't that the problem here with it too? Yeah. It's like. Yeah. That's perception of young white people, and for sure, there's other black people whose perception is reality. So I don't know what the actual data is, but I'll tell you very clearly, there's a lot of hardworking, pull themselves up by the bootstraps, younger white people who went through college debt, didn't have it given to them, and they come out on the other end, and they're at a major disadvantage, and that's something they feel.
Yeah. Now,
I'm not saying they're right or not. I'm just saying, hey, this is a complex thing.
Agreed.
What else we got?
Yeah. Can we talk about Black Lives Matter? I'm a white dude, and I hear other white people dismiss this movement by saying all lives matter. But it's got to be more complicated than that. How should I respond to those comments? Let me start. I'll start with that. I actually have concerns with the Black Lives Matter movement. So, and I'm, again, this is where I would say I don't speak for every black person in saying that. I absolutely recognize that need to lament at the reality that the truth is there just seems to have been a devaluing of black lives in a lot of situations that have happened, particularly with law enforcement recently, which we can talk about that later because I certainly am pro-law enforcement, but I can see the need for that. But what I see in the movement is I think sometimes the scope seems to be so limited to those instances and not looking at the other realities that we have to deal with. One of them that you talked about is fatherlessness. You know, if black lives matter to you, then you've got to get serious about fatherhood. And if you don't have strategies around that, maybe I just don't know enough about the movement to know what they're focused on. I think that's an incomplete expression of what that means. And so that's my opinion.
My take. I think, I'm mixed on it. What I'd say in the positive is I don't understand some of the criticism towards the Black Lives Matter movement. Like, why aren't they doing this? Why aren't they doing that? That's like saying, well, Crossroads, why aren't you trying to reach 80-year-old Methodists? Mm-hmm. That wasn't why we started to reach 80-year-old Methodists. Well, yeah. Why aren't you doing that? That was an organization that was started with a specific purpose. Their vision was what they're doing. Yeah. So yeah. Judging them for that, it'd be like judging P&G for not being in the automotive industry. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's what they started for that. Yeah. I do feel that there's not enough black voices. I'll ask you, do you think there's enough black voices that are calling the African-American community to take responsibility for their own lives and their own families?
I certainly don't think those voices get heard as much as other voices get heard. I think those voices are out there, but I don't think that they get heard. I would completely agree with that. Yeah. Yeah. How do you handle... let's skip that one. Looking at the demographics in Cincinnati, there's about 50-50 in Cincinnati, but our communities are very segregated. How can we unify and come together as a community, as a church, if we go back home in our predominantly white or black communities? Okay, so the question is, how can we come together if we still live separate? Yeah. Well, I mean,
we're together right now.
That's right. That's exactly right.
This is one of the things I get fired up about. I hear this line all the time the most segregated hour in America is church attendance. That's a stupid-ass saying. It's absolutely not true. Or I go to entire neighborhoods. Every hour, every day is segregated. You can go to entire school districts. Every hour, every day is segregated. You can go to restaurants in our city. The entire menu and everything is all segregated. So to like to say, it's just ridiculous. In fact, on top of that, I think it was the Hartford Institute that talked about a place where interracial conversations are happening is inside the megachurch. Because people are drawn, and they see enough people who are like them in this thing, and yet it's large enough that a bunch of different people are there coming under the banner of something higher than their race. Yeah. I think that's part of why we're one of the more racially success stories in our city, religious or irreligious. So I think what we can do, we can keep growing Crossroads as large and as strong as we possibly can.
Yeah, amen, amen. And we can be intentional within Crossroads.
You can clap for that, by the way. If you want to clap for that, you can clap for that.
And we can be intentional about what we do in this context. So, you know, that's why we're doing Undivided. You know, we're kicking off this weekend. 1,500 folks are going to be in mixed groups having this conversation. That's an intentional choice, and all 1,500 of those folks made an intentional decision to get uncomfortable. And, you know, I would say this, for us at Crossroads, we have to recognize it's still easy for us to come in a dark room that is diverse but not have relationships outside of the dark room that look diverse. So when we think about the folks around here that we do small groups with and the things that we do on go trips and who we choose to follow up with and build further relationship coming out of go trips, I would encourage you to think through the lens of, am I being intentional about reaching out to people who look different than me?
So how's it feel for you this year, presidential election, there's not going to be anyone black to vote for?
It feels like the pressure is off, to be honest with you. It feels like the pressure is off.
What do you mean
so,
by that?
Well, we talked about this. You know, I absolutely, you know, Obama's presidential election was historic for me. I mean, I have a father who grew up in the segregated world that we lived in. So that's not that's not my great-great, it's my dad. My dad grew up with separate bathrooms. So for my dad in his lifetime to see a black man actually become president was just, I mean, none of us imagined that. That was huge. I remember calling my dad that night. It was a big deal. And I absolutely voted for the black guy when he voted. I mean, when he came. I'm just being honest, I did. Come 4 years later, we had a
conversation. Well, yeah, because my first thing was I like McCain's ideas mm-hmm. and values and statements better than I did Barack Obama's, but I went in and I'm going like, there's no way I'm going to vote against the first black president. I'm just not, I can't vote for him, mm-hmm. but I'm not going to vote against him, so I abstained.
You abstained.
I abstained. Right. At least, I don't know if that was the right thing. I know you call me weenie boy, but that was just kind of where I was in that. And then we kind of had silence for 4 years, didn't talk about it much at all mm-hmm. until the second re-election came along.
And it was coming up and we were talking about it. And what was really good about that is you just asked me a question. You said, what's your lens? Tell me your lens by which you're making this election decision. And we, you know, it's great to have that conversation. And we went out to lunch. I remember we went out to lunch, we spent time talking about it. And as I thought through the lens of, if I look at my identities, I mean, we all kind of are a conglomeration of identities, what I recognized is I really voted out of my black identity in, what would that be, 2008. I voted out of my black identity in 2008. And what I realized is if I think about my higher identity is really my kingdom identity. Who am I as a follower of Jesus? What are my values and set of rules, the playbook I play from outside of my racial makeup? I think that's part of what happens when you come in a relationship with Jesus. So then, with that challenge in mind, I came to a different place. I really did come to a different place. And so in 2012, like you, I abstained. I didn't vote.
You didn't? I didn't have the guts to vote.
I couldn't vote. Well, I wasn't going to vote for Mitt Romney. Let me be clear. I was not going to vote for him. And you can judge me on
that
if you want to.
Because he's white or he's Mormon or what?
Keep going. It was a lot of other reasons, too. It's not going to vote for him. Not because he was white, but certainly.
Because he's gay? What?
Is he really? No, I didn't know. Like, no, I just didn't agree. I didn't agree. But it was really helpful in relationship to be challenged on that by you, and it helped me think through that lens. So I'm just glad that there's not a black president because I don't have to make that choice this year. So good. Slavery still happens today, regardless of race. Okay, does everyone have a right to reparations by looking back on their heritage? Mm. You want me to?
Gosh, I don't know about the slavery, everyone, everywhere. I mean, I think it's most relevant just in our cultural context. In our cultural context, it's only been Africans who've been enslaved. So I think that's the only relevant thing. I'm not really up for theorizing elsewhere in our context.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the reparations is a dead end.
I agree.
That's just not going to happen. And at the same time, I think it was a relevant discussion. There's no question one of the things that pushed our country forward economically in the early industrial era or pre-industrial era was cheap labor.
Yeah.
Cheap labor, and that economic wealth stayed within the white community. Yeah. So I think it's a valid point. I think it would have been a really valid discussion whenever in the 1900s
Very
or something,
recently,
but, you know,
right, yeah.
But it's not... It's a dead end right now.
Yeah, you know, for me, I think this is one of the other reasons why talking this fits in this series. Reparations feels to me like religion. It's a religious response. Yeah. It would not change anyone's heart. Yeah. If it happened and law was passed and that was executed, it wouldn't change anybody's heart. So for me, this is kind of the difference between the Jesus way and the religious way. The religious way seems to be massive because if you can just import a system and make everybody abide by the system, then it fixes the quote-unquote problem. And Jesus talks about instead a mustard seed revolution, right? A revolution that happens one heart at a time that over time changes it. So, you know, one of the reasons I'm excited about us doing Undivided and us having this conversation is there's a lot of folks that go to Crossroads that are influential in all kinds of sectors in our city. And if they go into those sectors with a mindset of justice, they can make a lot of change in our city. We don't need laws to be passed. So
one of the things that that we often see and raises objections to reparations, I'd be curious your take on, is there is a, my opinion, justifiable, I don't know what the right word is, anger around this because we see people from other countries and other backgrounds who came here, they weren't enslaved here, but they still came here with nothing and they're making something for themselves. And what's the difference between that and somebody who is born with nothing, even as a result of distant racism, not being able to put their nose to the grind mill?
Yeah.
At least as what it looks like to us.
Sure. And I really, I think it's a combination of them. I mean, that's one of those that's very, very complex. There's a difference when you've been oppressed versus not being oppressed. So for me, that question is the same question of, you got an Indian woman who came out of sex slavery, why can't she get her life together? And you want to compare that to another Indian woman who didn't, who wasn't oppressed.
But that's first generation. I'm not talking about first generation.
Yes, but so then I guess we need to think about what are the generational implications of being oppressed.
Okay.
You know, and I think there are. I think, I'll talk about the gym thing here. Maybe this is a great way, place to talk about it. Brian talked about going to the gym, and when he sees, you know, black guys, there's a difference, there's a check in terms of whether or not he locks his locker or not. And so, you know, he asked me, what would I do in that situation? I said, you know what the truth is? My knee jerk is the same as yours. My knee jerk is to have more skepticism if it was a room full of black men than if it was a room full of white men. And that's because I've been conditioned in the society to see myself as untrustworthy. It's why that racist glasses video makes me laugh and makes me think. Do you notice when the guy screams? He screams when he looks at himself in the mirror and sees all the stereotypes connected to his Hispanic heritage. The truth is, because of the racial oppression in our country, I got to overcome something that immigrants
don't have to overcome. Is that really a racial thing, though? I mean, is it you've been conditioned to see yourself that way? Or is it you've just been conditioned to see the statistics, and that is, if you're black, you have a higher likelihood of being in a hard way financially. If you're in a hard way financially, you have a higher likelihood of stealing something.
Yeah.
Now, is that a racial thing, or is that an economic thing?
It's a racial thing. Interesting survey, interesting study if you want to do it. There's going to be crime in our city this week. Notice the number of times they give a description and when they don't. I always know a white person did a crime when they don't get a description. Every time they give a description, it's me. 5'9". Seriously, it's me. I did every crime this week. It's me. So there are things like that that are part of our broken system that absolutely, you know, so when I go down the street, what am I thinking in my head? 5'9", about 190 pounds. He's going to steal from me. It's when I run in the morning in my neighborhood, and I always joke with people and say this, like, women who run in the area where I live, which is a great neighborhood, I always say, I don't know if you would run in the morning, but I don't have any problems running in the morning because a brother in a hood in the morning, nobody's messing with me. I'm good. They don't know I'm a pastor. All they know is I'm 5'9", 190, and I might have committed the crime they saw on TV last night. So I'll run anywhere.
No. Black guys who commit crimes at night do not run in the morning.
They don't. They run, period.
You are more likely to get mugged because you're a weenie boy if you're one of those guys that run.
Oh, they know I'm not one of the guys
that's one who's
stole,
not packing, right? There's one who doesn't have an attitude. He's working on himself.
That's good. this comes up every service. What did you think of Beyonce's formation? I didn't see the video. Or her Super Bowl halftime performance mimicking the Black Panthers. We talked about this yesterday. So honestly, I haven't seen the video. I certainly saw what she did at Super Bowl. And I don't know, maybe she has said, here was my intention. My intention was to make this statement. I don't know. So I speak in ignorance about her intentions when I say, you know, it's one of those things for me. I can understand why people were upset about that, but for me, I don't know that that needs to be a continual conversation that we have. That was one performer's choice to do something and make a statement. That happens all the time. There were other statements at the Super Bowl that I disagree with, too, at the halftime show. So
I don't know. It went over my head. I watched it, and I was more intrigued at the Super Bowl with how they had the lights shining behind the dancers and whether or not it was CG lights behind them and yada, 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 and all that kind of stuff. I think that the race discussion, it's been elevated, and that's good. Unfortunately, one organization that's unfortunately taken a hit are police officers.
Yeah.
I really do grieve that. I do grieve that the police departments are coming under, I think, unjustifiable scrutiny. There is justifiable racism and injustice that individual cops have had. I mean, the videotapes don't lie, right?
Right.
But I do grieve for the 90-whatever% that's not an issue at all. That we are dumbing down their confidence to lead and protect us. No clapping.
Yeah.
No clapping.
Yeah. I agree with you completely. And here's the other part of that. It also makes it difficult for certain populations to trust in their authority, which is also problematic.
But in Cincinnati, what, that half the cops are black, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is one of the good things. So it's like we're coming against it. We're not talking about a police department that's 99% white.
No, we're not. But it's a complex issue. That one's a complex issue for me. I do think, you know, the word that comes to mind for me is legitimacy. And what I would say is, I think it hurts, to your point, dumbing down their confidence. I hope that the person who claps is as passionate about the confidence being dumbed down when there are clear miscarriages of justice as well. Because that also creates the problem. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that I think we got to be able to talk about. When there is a miscarriage of justice based on video evidence and data, and when we can look at it and say, there's been wrong here, and there's an exoneration on the other side of that, that probably creates more license in the minds of broken police officers, the minority, small, small, small minority, to abuse their power. So it's a really complex thing. But at the end of the day, we absolutely need to have confidence in law enforcement. We need to respect the authority of law enforcement. And we need to see justice go both ways in our country.
Let's go a little deeper on this. Because we have, you know, there was this one guy who wrote an article a while ago, said, hey, the gist was, if you don't want us to give you a hard time, do what I say, what the cop said.
Mm-hmm.
And that had a massive, massive flash storm.
Mm-hmm.
I read that article and went, seems like good counsel to me.
That's respecting
seems
authority.
Seems to me like if a cop says something, you should just do it.
That's respecting authority. I mean,
not only respect authority, it's pretty darn smart.
It is. Well, I mean, we talk.
Well, why is that offensive? I don't understand that.
It's not offensive. I mean,
but it was offensive to a lot of African Americans. Why?
Well, I mean, the assumption there is do what I say because I'm right. Because I'm not going to be unjust. I'm not going to be stereotyping, profiling, all those things. So there's a lot of times when, unfortunately, doing what they say doesn't make it right if this is a bad apple in the bunch. What I would say to that is I'm going to train my boys. I have brown boys, you know, and I will train them. When you get pulled over by an officer, you do exactly what the officer says. You put your hands at 3 and 9, and you do not do anything or make any move until the officer instructs you to do so. Because my vision is this. I want my kid to get out of that.
Right.
And if there's injustice that happened in that, we can deal with that in the legal system. But I don't want to deal with it on the news because I'm...
And there's a key thing that's unique to your culture versus my culture. I didn't have to train my kids how to make sure they got the best out of a cop when they stopped. And I don't know anybody who is black who can't talk about being pulled over when they shouldn't have been pulled over, this or that. And for me, that's not been the case. I've run across butthead cops, absolutely sure. But I never felt like part of what was complicating it was my race.
Yeah. Question, so the goal is unity here. There are many different levels of racial misunderstanding. So what do you see as the beginning of a solution outside of preaching and events? That's good. I think it's the relationship that the preaching and events create. It goes back to what I said before. I mean, honestly, I think Brian and I would both say we view a lot of things in this area differently because of a friendship that we've had over the last, 12 years. I mean, you don't get there overnight.
That's right.
But in the context of our relationship, we've moved on things that I think both of us would have held dear in the beginning of that. And now it's like, no, I actually am on the other side of that now. That's happened in the context of relationship. I think that's the hope with this.
America's really, really odd, right? I mean, you read other countries, and other countries just judge us so much because, I can't believe you can't get your race thing together. I can't believe we've had that solved for a long time. Yeah, but again, we're the only country that I'm aware of that we did wholesale kidnapping and importing and forcing to inculcate. No other country that I'm aware of in the world has that as part of their race dynamic, right?
Right.
So in that kind of charged dynamic that we have here, I really believe the only hope is we can have a higher percentage of our city at a crossroads and growing to Christ at a like of crossroads, or church like crossroads, and nationally.
Yes.
Jesus is the only one who brings any solution here at all.
Yep.
You never meet some atheist who goes, my atheism made me more this.
Yeah.
My agnosticism made me more this. You just tend not to find that. I'm not saying that atheists are racist, more racist than people who follow Jesus. I'm saying that I have a playbook of just a few of the verses I just read.
Right.
That drives me to say, Brian, you must think and act differently if you're to be one with Christ.
Yes.
You cannot be one with Christ and have these attitudes and actions towards people who look like differently. You can't. There's a constant tension point there.
Yeah.
And outside of that tension, legislation won't do it. Feel good or do goodism won't do it. Right. You know, PCism won't do it. It's got to be that relationship with God.
Absolutely. That's where all the power is.
Yeah.
It's a spiritual problem, and it has a spiritual solution.
That's good.
And only a spiritual solution. Yeah. So
I think we're done.
I think we are. I think we are. So this is great to continue.
Now you can clap. Now you can clap. Or boo.
Awesome.
Or boo. You can boo too. Hey, man, thanks for thanks for being very gracious towards me, because I know I say way more offensive things to you in private than should be said. So
yes.
If I've said anything today that's somewhat intelligible to a culture outside of mine, in large parts due to you and your tutelage.
That
so
goes
thank
both
you.
Ways, man.
Yeah.
So thank you for being humble enough to engage me on this.
Yeah.
It's been good. It's been good.
Awesome. All right, so God, thank you for our time today, and we're asking for the right applications to be made in our lives, the right applications with the people we should talk with, the right applications in our attitudes, the right applications, and just the choices we make, even choices like where to go eat, who to spend time with. And I thank you for a place to have a discussion like this, and we pray this goes beyond our mind to our hearts and to our limbs. And I pray these things according to your name, Jesus. Amen.
Amen.